Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom, boom, boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
I was gonna do it.
My name is Eric, and I'm here today with Don Piano Michael Kester, and we got a couple films that are, I guess, children's films made by. Hey, what the fuck are you doing making children's films?
Yep, that's about right. We've got Spy Kids, which is a Robert Rodriguez joint.
Sure.
And then we have Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, which is technically not, but absolutely is, a Stuart Gordon, Brian Usna joint.
Yeah, you like to use the word joint a lot, but if you're ever going to use it, it's Stuart Gordon and Brian Usna. And Joe Johnston, you know, made the movie. He's important, too. We just love our Stuart Gordon, and we just can't help it. These are movies that we are going to spoil. And the thing about spoiling a film is you can't unspoil it, unless your brain is as poorly wired as mine is and don't remember what happens 3 days after you watch a movie. Not foreshadowing for our show. I have notes. We'll be fine. You can skip over me reading through notes and chapters. And see, I don't even remember week to week how this part of the show goes.
Yeah, this is easily the worst part of the show every week.
Use the chapters. Skip this part of the show.
Also, send us some emails about chapters. We really need to know your feedback on chapters.
Oh, God. The thing about chapters is you can use them.
Spy Kids
is the first chapter. Can we just talk about the cast? Let's just get this out of the way right now.
Okay, this is a long list, isn't it?
I'm going to say Carla Gugino is probably the name I forget to reference the most, but shouldn't. She was Lucille in Sin City.
She was way, way, way back on the very first episode of Double Feature, Eric.
Singing Detective.
She's in The Singing Detective.
Sure. She's in Watchmen. She's in a lot of stuff. I don't know
she's
why.
She's amazing.
I forget
her. She was in Electrolux, which is that kind of, it's the sequel to Women in Trouble.
Yes.
She's great. She's a great, great actor, and she's gorgeous, and she's a mom.
She's not Cheech Marin, and that's probably why I forget.
Well, Cheech Marin and Antonio Banderas and Danny Trejo play mustache spies Spy Kids, which is that's the trio of characters who are spies because they have mustaches.
Sure. Is that official Spy Kids canon, or are you making that up?
Apparently, the mustache goes on and the spy goes on.
I wish there was an official tome of Spy Kids canon like there is for Star Wars films, or any large franchise has that kind of... There's got to be a Spy Kids wiki online.
Oh, there better be.
There will be by the time the show goes up. I'll fucking tell you that. President Clooney is part of that universe. Yeah. That's
with
an important
glasses.
Part. Oh, God, that's great. Alexa Vega, who, you know, Alexa Vega and Daryl Sabara come up on our show, but they come up because they were
because
on
of Spy,
Spy
Kids.
Kids. Yeah. So where else have we seen these two actors?
Alexa Vega was in Repo.
Yeah, she was in Repo.
Daryl Sabara was a couple weeks back on World's Greatest Dad. He's in Rob Zombie's Halloween. He's in Machete.
Sure.
He's all over the place.
Alan Cumming doesn't show up on our show nearly often enough.
We haven't. That's because we haven't covered X-Men.
Yeah. Got to find a way. That's what you should actually email us. Come up with a good mechanic for us to cover X-Men, and we'll reject it and then not do X-Men. That's a shame.
Then there's Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah, who is?
Well, he's Minion in this, but he's Monk. Have we seen Tony Shalhoub on the show before?
I don't think so.
Okay. So this is the beginning of Tony Shalhoub.
Sure, sure.
It's actually really bizarre to see him in such a small role in anything, but not as bizarre as it is to see Terry Hatcher not being Lois Lane.
Oh, my God. Well, and Coraline was another Hatcher spot. Yeah, but yeah, the fucking Superman stuff, the other longstanding Superman TV show not called Superman. Directors Mike Judge, Richard Linklater Robert Patrick from Terminator 2.
Even a smaller role.
Dick Clark is in this fucking movie. Who is not in? Yeah, he's one of the investors.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, basically everyone is in Spy Kids. Antonio is in Spy Kids as a sweater and glasses wearing father, which is a role I have never seen him in before.
we've seen him as a father.
Yeah.
But he was far suaver.
In The Misbehaviors, which doesn't star the kids from Spy Kids. A little surprising to me. I guess that was years before. He is a mustache spy. That's his career. That's what Antonio Banderas does. Yeah, I mean, he does a lot of things, but I think of him from the Desperado stuff, which certainly at the time was.
So you don't think of him from Interview with the Vampire then?
No, Mustache Vampire is not. That was the beginning of Antonio Banderas on our show, wasn't it?
I think it was, yeah.
Probably. That was early enough. Oh, sorry about that, man.
It's because we didn't do that double feature I recommended about Nasonex.
Another episode for another year. He gets into a little bit of a fight at school, that kind of imaginary fight.
I love that.
The little Spanish guitar riff plays. That is Antonio Banderas right there. I like seeing him wearing a sweater. I think that's a good look for him. I like him in this role.
I think Antonio Banderas is underrated as a comedic actor.
He is, yeah.
I think he
really
understands comedic timing and the kind of slapstick overacting that it really requires to be a comedic actor.
Sure.
And I mean, that's a lot of that is in part to Robert Rodriguez's understanding of comedic timing and comedic pacing and just the whole over exaggeration of comedy to make it poignant and funny.
Yeah, it's great to look at his spy moments in here and then moments in Desperado. Desperado being a little serious but still funny.
Sure.
It was it's just a funny comedy. It doesn't rely on one liner. Desperado really should be championed for, we could do a whole nother show on fucking Desperado. If only there were two more movies in that franchise. People will never get rid of Robert Rodriguez on double feature. He just, as long as he makes seven movies a year, there will always be a spot.
Eventually, we'll just be pairing him up with Rob Zombie's
albums,
commercials.
The best part about the first Spy Kids is not just the cast, but that the sum is greater than its parts.
Yeah.
You know, seeing all these people come together and the things they do, it's not just, a children's movie has an actor in it that I like. It really makes for a fantastic fucking movie.
Well, and the thing that I think is strong about Spy Kids, and I mean, it's as strong as it is brave, is that you have this behemoth cast of, especially when it came out, very famous people.
Sure.
And the film doesn't rely on any of them. The film's entire crux lies on these two children.
Yeah.
The film is based on these two, and they're nobody actors at this point. You know, this is the first Spy Kids movie. Alexa Vega and Daryl Sabara have not been in anything. They're classic Robert Rodriguez screen-tested actors. When later on he did Sharkboy and Lavagirl, he let his son pick them by meeting them.
Sure.
I'm sure this is very similar. He had them come in, he sat down with them, spoke to them, and made sure he related to them on an adult level.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of what the film is it's treating these children like they have as much weight as adults.
Sure.
And they do. That's what makes Spy Kids great, is that it's not a kid's film for adults. It's not fucking Shrek.
Yeah.
Although Antonio Banderas.
Yeah, right. Where we'll put a couple dirty jokes in that kids won't get, and then adults will not fall asleep during the film.
You see in every review of every computer animated fucking movie is, you know, it's for kids, but adults will love it too.
Yes.
Ha ha ha, you won't be bored taking your kid. Fuck you.
This is why I hate reviews.
Fuck you.
Copy and paste that shit every time that movie comes out.
You know, when I see a kid's film, you know what I want the audience to be, Eric?
What?
Kids.
Yeah.
The kids, children's films are not made so that adults enjoy them.
Well, we can always go back to when we did shorts and you and me and our producer went and we were the only adults in the movie theater.
I don't think kids' films for adults. I think that's an absolute waste of time.
Sure.
Make a grown-up film and make a kids' film.
Sure.
Spy Kids is the perfect example of making a film for kids where there's a joke. Okay, so there's a joke buried in Spy Kids where the robot voice says, "Now flushing your poop."
Yeah.
And it's impossible not to laugh.
Yeah.
It's one of the funniest moments in the film.
Yeah,
and
it's really good.
You can't, it's, that's not a grown up joke.
Sure.
It's a joke that kids are going to crack up at.
It's
shiitake
also,
mushrooms, staple of the Spy Kids franchise.
It is.
That's a kid's joke.
Well, and these were a lot more Robert Rodriguez written than the other Spy Kids movies.
Right.
I think this is the, let's call this the best treatment of scatological humor in the Spy Kids franchise.
That's probably true.
When I go back and watch the first Spy Kids movie, I kind of bounce around. I'll watch different ones in the series at different moments, depending on who I'm with and which ones they were convinced to see by their other friends.
Right.
And when I get back to the first one, that's always a moment where I go, wow, they were a lot more subtle about that poop joke.
Right. As opposed to the diaper bomb in Spy Kids 4.
It's really an evolution of scatological humor throughout the franchise. The parents are used heavily in the beginning before they hand things over to the kids.
Sure.
We get the bedtime story, which, I mean, I would watch a whole fucking movie of. It's so seeing.
So you're saying that you would like to see a movie about one of the adult characters in Spy Kids as the same character, but.
All right, so maybe I have that. Maybe those films totally exist. But, you know, you get this glimpse of what a straight Rodriguez spy movie would look like. If it were an actual, not just action, guitar case full of weapons, but an actual spy movie. And, you know, cutting back and forth to Alexa Vega's character and having her interjections of where she would like the story to go, and as if she's never been told the story. Right. Every moment of every scene in that is fucking funny. Every single moment. There is not a single frame of wasted space in that flashback, or really anywhere in Spy Kids. Everything is funny or exciting or has some kind of charm to it.
Well, and it brings to light this idea that Spy Kids takes advantage of, which is there are these genres of film in the world. Nobody's a stranger to this. We're a film podcast. But what if you made kids do it? You have new genres immediately popping up. Take our quintessential slasher outline. Group of sexually active teenagers go into the woods, are killed by an adult. Change that to group of mischievous children go into the woods, are killed by another child.
Yeah, right.
That's a completely... I would go see that movie.
Especially if Robert Rodriguez did it, right?
All you need to do is you can treat children like adults. Kids get it. They can act. They can portray the same... They're human beings. They're just little ones.
Yeah,
we talk about
human beings only smaller.
Right.
Sorry.
We talk about shitty child actors and how we hate them. We talk about it all the time, but honestly, more often than not on the show, and this is to be completely fair, we talk about how good they are.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
We hate them generally, but specifically they're amazing.
In the movies we hand select, they're always the greatest child actor. Yeah, so there might be enough of them to say make films with.
Go fucking figure.
So you have created a genre here. Many genres. You just take any type of
child exploitation, dare I say.
Make it with a spaghetti western, but using just kids.
Right. Instead. And it's not to say kids in grown-ups roles. Like, I don't want to see a kid as a bartender.
I kind of do. But real spaghetti only smaller. I'm just going to keep using that. Just add only smaller to any type of film.
Why would the kid be a bartender?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's a juice bar. Who cares?
Well, as long as across the board, the special effects are completely handled as if nobody gives a shit.
Right. Hey, these are the early days of...
computer animation.
There's really no excuse for this.
Days of computer animation are the Lawnmower Man. This is 10 years following.
Are you sure it's 10 years? Because the visual effects, beg to disagree. So it's cartoonish, right? Yeah. It blends in with the aesthetic of the movie.
Who are you fooling? You're fooling 6-year-olds.
Yeah.
They just have to believe that it looks cool. They don't have to believe that it's real.
I don't even think these are as bad as the special effects get. This is just like the poop jokes.
Right.
They are
far
superior here. And then eventually, I think find their own. I don't even want to say they get worse. I think they just embrace.
Well, I think the rationale, the blanket rationale behind Spy Kids is finding its audience and making a film for that audience. It's what we love Robert Rodriguez for, right?
Sure.
We're talking about how it's strange that he makes a kid's film. But the reality of the situation is Robert Rodriguez is very good at knowing his audience and making a film to please them. That's why Machete was such a big deal when it was coming out, because he knew people wanted it.
Yeah.
That's why he made it. That's why the trailer sparked the interest and it became what it did. Spy Kids, he knows it's for his children. He knows what his kids like. He knows that audience. Sure. He's not making a film to please a mass of people. His ideology is, if the kids like it, this is a success.
Yeah, this isn't because it's easy for him. It probably is easy for him, but that's not, you know, I'll just sleep through directing this children's film so I can make a quick buck. I mean, you can see his excitement for the genre in everything that's going on in the movie. It's just overflowing with ideas.
Yeah.
There's ideas. I mean, the set design alone, like the safe house and the way everything flips around, and then all the gadgets and devices.
And Floop's entire castle. Floop's TV show with the Danny Elfman theme.
Sure. We have a Floop TV show. Why? Well, just because.
Because that would be great. I would watch a Robert Rodriguez helmed Floop's Fooglies TV show. Well, as long as it starred Mike Judge, not as the voice of Butthead.
It's another double feature. We just need a Floop's TV movie.
With Nazanex.
I was going to say straight spy, but you know what? Nazanex, that's fine too. You get this feeling that there is more to take in than they're really allotting time for.
Right.
It's the opposite of stretching your premise too thin. It's just, you know, slow the fuck down. It's as if the movie's running ahead of you.
Well, it's got to keep the children entertained.
A lot of times that could just mean fast edits or a bunch of flashy nonsense. And this is, these are concrete, oh, hey, wasn't that clever,
right,
kind of ideas. Not even one per scene or one per frame. Every time you're looking at a scene, there's 20 of them that all pop out of it. You hit a button and 30 things flip around with cool, crazy ideas that you don't even explore and you just move on.
Right.
This is why this is begging for its own canonical collection,
sure,
of Spy Kids lore, is because there's so much here. It's a better film than I am an audience. I cannot comprehend.
I love that.
That's, you know, that's the formula. Make a better film than your audience is ready for. Run ahead of your audience. A lot of the humor, too, is based on cinematic reveals. It's, you know, the mustache gadget is,
right,
one of the best jokes in the whole thing. And it's because you don't expect it, but it's also the cinematic moment where there's a gadget and whatever. And that makes it funny. Or the thing where the floor appears,
right,
to fall out.
Sure.
And you're seeing it and we're dealing with, oh, this is where you got to cross the canyon thing and it's falling and, whoa, adventure, Indiana Jones. And then it's just a piece of plexiglass.
Mm-hmm.
You're showing things with your camera or you're relying on the audience's previous knowledge of these other films, and then you're creatively putting a spin on that, and that's where the humor is. Even the jokes have to be creative like that. Another, really a staple of the Spy Kids franchise. I mean, normal things are spy technology. You are surprised by, oh, this item or this item or this item that you thought were normal household things. I mean, that's kind of spy stuff in general. That's
right.
Why spy's perfect thing to make a children's film out of, because you have all these unique little surprises, these unique little items, these unique little Nightmare Before Christmas B-sides. Did not anticipate that the first time I saw this movie. You and I are both Nightmare Before Christmas,
oh, yeah,
fans.
Well, I mean, I like Danny Elfman everything. Oingo
Which
Boingo.
Makes us Oingo Boingo fans,
yeah,
right? Makes us Danny Elfman fans. I think at this point, you and I are probably bigger Oingo Boingo fans than Danny Elfman score fans.
That's true. Big time.
But man, you get the Nightmare Before Christmas soundtrack was one of the greatest, kind of,
sure,
combining a few of those,
yeah,
different,
absolutely,
things. Danny Elfman does it alone. You get a singing voice. Danny Elfman also shows up and just does a song in the,
sure,
Spy Kids movie. And like everything else, this is a brief glimpse into a creative idea that could have been further strung out.
Right.
And no, we're just going to show you. We don't even get the whole fucking song, man.
Right.
We get 30 seconds of the song. Hey, I wrote a song for you, an original Danny Elfman song. You can use it in your, oh, cool. Yeah, we'll just stick the first 25 seconds in. That's nice. Cut to something else. I'm bored. The rest of the music, too, there's, you know, so there's some of the Robert Rodriguez wrote the,
right,
score. You get the Los Lobos stuff. They wrote some stuff for Desperado as well. From a Rodriguez standpoint, you're getting that usual kind of writing, editing, that stuff. But this is the last movie he did on film.
Huh.
You and I, every time we see a Rodriguez movie, we kind of go, where does this fall? Is this the last film one? Because he became a big digital guy.
Right.
And after this, it was all digital from then on. And so he was working at one of the Lucas houses for sound engineering, or maybe it's visual effects. And I think it was Lucas himself who kind of went, ah, digital filmmaking. Are you aware of any of this? Have you seen this? And that kind of became, I mean, Robert Rodriguez was already a pretty big name and doing a lot of notable things.
Mm-hmm.
But then he became an early proponent of make films digitally. It's something the entire industry is doing now.
Sure. So a lot of the thing that Spy Kids covers, and yes, we're going to talk about some of the themes in the Spy Kids films.
In the third installment of the Spy Kids franchise, this is actually kind of happening now,
this idea of importance of family and you are,
sure,
a Cortez, and,
yeah,
you know, that whole mentality. And that's your standard children's movie fare, only in this film, it fucking matters.
Yeah, sure.
Spying is in your blood.
Yeah.
And the reason you are doing such a good job is because your parents were spies. And if you believe in yourself as a spy, you will do okay because,
sure,
it's in your blood.
Yeah.
And you're from a spy family and your family's looking out for you because despite the fact that they're your blood relatives, it's your peers having your back.
Sure.
And it's a cute little kitschy thing that their peers happen to all be families. And, oh, we need another person for the other 100.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God Uncle Machete swings,
yeah, right,
through the window. But
good thing I wrote that character in.
But what it also goes to say is that in a more general sense, you know, spies, anybody, you need to pay attention to who's around you, and other people have your back. And that's kind of the greater message to the film.
Sure.
Although you wouldn't think so with the antagonists of the film.
Yeah,
because
right.
you have...
That didn't work out so well.
You have basically Pee Wee Herman and Pee Wee Herman's producer.
Sure.
And they seem to be on the same team.
Yeah, they do. Well, the minion floop thing is another piece that just makes this so unique. It's not so much a henchman kind of dynamic as... We think everything's about Floop. We find out this is sort of a weird partnership they have. It seems like Minion is really in control and using Floop as a puppet.
Right.
That's kind of where we arrive at.
Well, and there's the obvious deceptive nature of his name being Minion.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that is right off the bat.
Throw us off a little bit there.
His name is Minion.
It allows that descent, though. It allows Minion to take the lead. When you have a partnership of villains like that, they can disagree.
Mm-hmm.
And in those disagreements, I mean, I wish this became a cinematic cliche. I wish this was something where all bad guy, evil villains were now partnerships that disagreed sometimes and had to have a debate about how to be evil. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's kind of the brilliant thing about two evil people who disagree is that bad people will just turn on you.
Yeah, right.
Good people, you know, your family, your peers and your friends, they're going to stick with you even when you do something stupid or you make a dumb mistake. They're not going to go, oh, I disagree with you. Never mind. We're not on the same side anymore.
Sure.
But villains... It takes very little for them to decide, no, never mind, I'm on my own. I'm taking this solo, you're wrong, you're my enemy.
Although you do see kind of a realistic disagreement in the Machete character, in Uncle Machete.
Right, but it comes down to family is family, and good people look out for good people.
Yeah.
But right, you get this whole Machete
he's
hombre
gone astray,
dynamic.
Though. Yeah.
Right.
He's the businessman who's kind of separated from the family, and his job now is to make the creative things. Is to go, okay, these little spy gadgets, we realize this is a thing we can latch on to. Kids like this. It's good for the movie. Why don't we talk to the guy who makes the spy gadgets? That's where you go in that universe. Of course you want to talk to that guy. I'm glad the movie's aware enough to make that a central character. And so he's had a falling out, and he gives the kids a chance... character-wise, to demonstrate they're not just following the plan of the adults.
Right.
This isn't just, well, the adults are absent, we're going to follow kids around, but they're doing what the adults want. Uncle Machete makes this call that, you know, he kind of disagrees with them. And they say, fuck it, we're going to take this plane thing and we're going to get the fuck out of here. Yeah, so they have their own plan, and they're going to do it with or without his help.
Sure.
And, you know, he comes back because they need him, and they tie him back into the story for the same reason he left. I don't remember what that is.
I love that.
Just another one of my favorite lines of this. Just throw away who gives a fuck. But this is all stuff specific to this character. What really needs to be said, or maybe doesn't need to be said, is Uncle Machete.
Uncle Machete.
Machete. Danny Trejo Machete in the Spy Kids universe.
Yeah.
In the, I guess, the Rodriguez universe.
Right.
Years and years before this Machete thing happened, because the idea of Machete was, hey, there should really be a mexploitation movie with Danny Trejo. That'll never happen. I'll just make him Uncle Machete. And it became a kind of joke of the Rodriguez universe that turned into its own movie. It's just so beautiful because of fan reaction, because people wanted that. I wanted to ask you something really fucking selfish. How do you get people to watch this movie? How do you convince your friends to watch Spy Kids?
You know, my friends...
You do have to convince them, right?
You do. It's really easy. You just show them Machete, you show them Planet Terror, and you show them Desperado, and then you say, this guy made a kids film.
Yeah, I guess it's that easy.
It's
That's
less,
how I saw it.
It's less, you should watch Spy Kids with me, because once you say Spy Kids, they remember Spy Kids from when it came out, and they go, really, Spy Kids? Are you serious? But if you tell them that the Planet Terror guy made a kids movie, their immediate response is, I want to see kids with guns for legs.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah, and I feel like it still delivers in a noticeably different but more surprising way than you would expect. That's a much better method than my current... Listen, you watch the first 10 minutes of this movie, and if you don't like it, then we don't have to watch it. And that always works, but there has to be the initial buy-in.
Sure.
There's always the, what do I get out of this bet? I've still yet to come up with anything. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids is another movie.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids is 90s family sci-fi adventure.
Yeah, it's getting there. It's the 90s before the 90s happened.
Right.
So what it is 1989, and Rick Moranis is texting from the attic about breakfast.
Uh-huh.
That's what this movie is. It's the end of, we're not quite in this age of technology and wonder yet. That would come, you know, a full 10 years later.
Sure.
When these gadgets would be appreciated by everyone, mass appeal. But we're just getting out of the 80s weird science kind of that fascination.
Real genius and the whole...
Yeah, right. The mad science. That whatever happened to 80s mad science?
Yeah, it's kind of this weird thing because I think it just... It got on some weird fast track and turned into films for grown-ups.
Yeah.
4 years after Honey, I Shrunk the Kids was Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Which to me is one of the ultimate look what science can do in film.
Sure. And a lot of tie-ins.
And
tons of tie-ins with Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Jurassic Park.
And you just get this idea of in the 80s, it's mad science. And for whatever reason, they're trying to explain it as if there's something to say. But because it's so cartoonish and because grown-ups don't really believe that you can do, because science doesn't happen to adults,
right.
It gets written off as it's, I don't know, maybe motivational to kids' wild imaginations or some such bullshit.
Well, it treats science the same way that Mr. Wizard or the kind of Bill Nye the Science Guy that, let's get kids excited about science. But well, they took those shows that said let's get kids excited about science, and they dumped the science part, which was the part that was actually working,
right?
And they picked up the goofy fucking part that was a thing you put up with so you could see the cool science part, and ran with that. And I think that's how that 80s thing was created.
I could totally see that.
It was just goofy beakers and smoke coming out, and we used that to the same 80s. Formula of those other things. I mean, I kind of feel like the place it went was 90s sci-fi.
Yeah.
Because it disappeared for 10 years or something before we found another reinvention of weird science. I'm just going to keep saying weird science. It's so perfect. I mean, there isn't a better spot. And
the thing about all of these films is that they try to make the science seem rational.
Sure.
They have this grand premise of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, which, I mean, it went through like six title changes.
Sure.
It was called Teeny Weenies.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, but then it was rejected because they were afraid that it would be for too childish of an audience. So there was The Backyard and then The Small People or some. Grounded was one of them.
Sure.
All horrible titles. Terrible job, Stuart.
Oh, blame Brian.
But eventually they went with Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Sure.
So the premise is Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, you know, I mean, easiest pitch ever.
Well, yeah, you want to talk about high concept.
Yeah.
I mean, when we try and explain high concept in movies that doesn't belong, this is where Honey, I Shrunk the Kids is, well, what is your movie about? Give me the elevator pitch.
It's called Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Oh, so it's about two parents that accidentally shrink their kids?
Yeah.
And then that situation needs to be resolved somehow?
Uh-huh.
Do we spend an entire movie seeing what it would be like if kids got shrunk?
That's exactly what we do, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I completely understand. In fact, I could write and direct...
No. Hold on. I understand that you're already on board with the film, but let me explain the science behind it.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So that's what I'm trying to get at.
So you only have a 30-second elevator pitch to explain the science. How do you explain the science, Michael?
I have it written down as blah, blah, science.
And greenlit.
But that's kind of what I was trying to get at with all of these 80s... science films for kids is that for whatever reason, although you're on board with he has this laser, it shrinks children.
Yeah.
That's all you need in the movie.
Yep.
They're still hung up on the science portion of it.
Sure.
So instead they go, imagine this apple as electrons.
Yeah.
And if it were smaller, we could use it to shrink the space in between and then we could transport. So that's the why. And the film goes through really, really stretched pains to explain why it's shrinking children.
Sure.
As if anybody gives a flying fuck why kids are sleeping in a Lego.
Well, and they talk over the audience too. They go, you know, there's that scene where he's pitching the idea.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, well, you know, obviously there's space between atoms and you can just shrink down the amount of space and then all the stuff. I don't know why you're even questioning this. All right, let's move on to the next scene. It's just such a, and now we've gotten to a point. This is what I was trying to talk about. Remember we did the year end, we had that email about Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
And someone had written to us saying, Yeah, and they had said, you know, you guys really thought the science was cool.
Uh-huh.
I thought all the science was wrong, and then they wrote us a lab report of why the science
was bad. The reason that I knew the science was wrong is because monkeys hadn't cured Alzheimer's in the world I live in.
Right, well, that too. Yeah, there's
that's
that
how you know
universe.
The science is actually bogus, is that people haven't shrunk stuff
sure,
yet.
Sure. Well, my retort, though, at the time, and I think
yeah, I'm
this
sure you
really,
have a far better one.
Well, no, actually, I want to stick to my guns on this. I had said the fact that the movie could even have that level of you could debate it in that
sure.
sense. I mean, if I want to debate the science in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, I would just have to go, that's not how science works.
Right.
That's really all I could say.
Sure.
If I wanted to talk about that in Rise of the Planet of the Apes,
you need a lab
science, report? Yeah, I need a lab coat is what I need. The science literacy, people are all gloom and doom all the time uh-huh. about, oh, we're getting dumber every year and people are so lazy now with their smartphones and we don't know anything.
Nobody meets people in person anymore because of the social networks.
Yeah, right. Our science literacy, just as a race, has gotten so much fucking better that now we can have movies like Sunshine and
yeah.
Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
I blame Mythbusters.
Well, our science discourse is it's so much better
yeah.
that we can talk about things on such a level of science literacy. And they're not right, because as you pointed out, it's fiction. We're making stuff up.
Sure.
You know, you could always pick apart the science, but you can
but if you
pick
can
apart
follow
the science.
Thought.
Yeah, I mean, it just says something really great about our culture that we've gotten so much more science literate that we can weave really just a lot more science into our movies. We can talk about things on a conceptual level and then have the type of... Basically, we've gone from the debates that creationists have about evolution to the debate scientists have about evolution.
Right.
That's how far we've come since 80s movies, where you just have people who know science and people who know fucking nothing.
Right.
Vast misunderstanding on a simple level, cannot talk about basic concepts. And now we have a science advisor on Sunshine.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Way to go, humanity.
And science aside, the other thing that really Honey, I Shrunk the Kids does right... And, I mean, they knew they did it right because it ended up in a theme park,
is what the movie's actually about.
Yeah, it's that the world of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, that backyard
yeah.
of former title fame,
sure.
is so immersive.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, it does this thing where you put yourself in a big backyard
mm-hmm.
and you're terrified and ants are gigantic
sure,
and
sure.
there's a scorpion. No, yeah. don't talk about why there may or may not be a scorpion.
I wasn't going to bring it up.
But you sleep in a Lego and you might get squashed by the fucking... Okay, so who needs giant monsters in movies when there is killer rain?
Sure.
That meteor shower
sure.
of sprinkler drops... is so intense.
It, well, this was the Fly franchise before Cronenberg
sure.
redid it. You
yeah.
know, it was tiny things are giant monsters now, and
right.
they are actually terrifying.
Yeah,
and everything is hairy. That's also yeah. terrifying.
Yep.
Turns out when you get really small, everything has tons of hair on it, and it's gross.
It begs this question that is one of my fucking. So when you watch this movie with somebody who maybe isn't a host of Double Feature,
sure,
you're gonna get. The person, and we haven't talked about them on the show before, but they exist in every film.
Oh, no.
The type of person who watches Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, sits back with their arms crossed and go, well, why don't they just climb the grass?
Sure.
Why don't they just all whistle again and get the dog to come out
right,
after
right.
the cat goes away?
Why doesn't the movie just end?
Why don't they just solve it this way? Why don't they just solve it that? Because that's not what the film is about. The film
sure.
is about this immersive backyard.
Right.
I mean... When you get a situation where you can think of a solution that would have ended the film 15 minutes ago, the reason it doesn't end there is because they know it could end there, but there's other paths the film
right.
can take.
Right.
Instead of going, why don't you whistle, have Quark take you inside? Oh, the cat
sure.
scared him away. Why
sure.
don't you whistle and bring him out again? It's because they want you to know they know you can bring the dog out.
Sure.
But instead, the film needs to explore these other avenues of salvation, and ultimately, it needs children in a cereal bowl.
You know, those people are why superhero movies suck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're the reason that anytime you make a superhero movie, the first thing you have to do is check off 60 boxes of, well, people are going to wonder about this, and they're going to want to know why we didn't mention this thing, and they're going to want to know where Captain America's wings on the side of his head went. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The kind of stickler people.
Sure.
Those are comic book people.
Yeah.
Your entire audience when you make a superhero film is those fucking people.
Yeah, that's true.
And they ruin everything.
And this film, it bites back. I mean, you have The reason is it's too cool.
Yeah.
It's too cool.
The reason is fuck you, audience.
Yeah.
We're going to keep going. It's funny mentioning Captain America by total happenstance, but that is Joe Johnston who did that, who directed film. Who did The Rocketeer as well, which everyone keeps. Isn't that the Jennifer? No, I almost said Jennifer Tilly. That would have been interesting. Connelly?
Yes. Jennifer Connelly.
Yeah, people keep telling me to see that. And, so I'll check that
what's
out.
His name? The James Bond that was in Hot Fuzz.
And Stuart Gordon and Brian Yuzna are mad science people. That's where the mad science comes in. Not from the Captain America half. But they're that's kind of the reason, I think, for the Reanimator vibe, is their obsession with mad science from those two guys. And then Christine Sutherland is in this, who was Buffy's mom in the TV show, who is not Susan Sarandon from the Rocky Horror Picture Show era.
Sure.
People confuse those. Also confuse Kimmy Robertson. Kimmy Robertson was Lucy in Twin Peaks. She was not Annie Portz from Ghostbusters. Oh. You remember the squeaky secretary from Ghostbusters?
Yes.
Different than the squeaky secretary from Twin Peaks, who is the woman in this film. None of these people matter, though. I want to talk about Rick Moranis. That's where I was going.
You talk about Rick Moranis. I'm going to talk about Matt Frewer when you're done.
Well, Rick Moranis is the dad from Gremlins, the oddball inventions guy.
Yeah.
He's not
actually the dad from Gremlins.
No, he's not. But he's the guy creating the Rube Goldberg machine that butters toast.
Yeah, your Pee-wee's morning
routine. You got it. I mean, when you think about Honey, I Shrunk the Kids as a franchise... He is the thing that Honey, I Shrunk the Kids is about.
Yeah.
Every single fucking cover is, look, it's Rick Moranis being goofy again. The whole movie, I mean, it's about kids playing in a backyard. And when it's not, it's about Rick Moranis wearing a funny hat.
Yep.
He is wearing about 7 funny hats in this movie. He's Wayne Szalinski, which is probably one of the biggest roles he's known for, outside of, I guess, the Ghostbusters
Right.
Maybe that's why people make
and
that,
Little Giants.
That connection. He pushes the plot along just as much as anything in this film.
Uh-huh.
It's funny given that he doesn't actually find the solution in the end. He doesn't find the kids and he doesn't really fix the machine. But damn it, he's out there making sure this movie is going somewhere.
Right.
He's out in the fucking yard and he's the one who sees how small the chair is, his thinking couch or whatever. And there is that, I mean, God, you remember back to the Sunshine conversation. That was talking about how big universe is and how small and terrified that makes me feel. That's how it is when I see the tiny couch. It's everything is impossibly large, especially when you see the yard again. The camera peers up from over that fence. The yard is as big as the universe was in Sunshine. It is the biggest fucking thing. You cannot scale across it. It's impossible, yet somehow they're the ones who save the day. You might get the impression from seeing that these kids would be impossible to find. I mean, if I were thinking about, if this had actually happened to me, to be the armchair guy, the arms folded guy, I would go, well, that's it for those kids. They died.
Yeah.
There is no, but he puts on a fucking hat and he gets out there.
And he counterbalances himself with a bunch of cinder blocks.
Well, that's the thing, is the film tells you he's a smart guy. And you don't often get a chance to see that because his machine sucks and nobody wants to buy it and he can't get things to work. He's like, you know, down and out scientist. But he gets out there and he straps binoculars on his helmet and he fucking tries to find the kids.
Yep.
He tries to use his ingenuity to find the kids. And he looks absurd combing over the lawn, but I think it's the eccentricity of that character that is why he became a thing for the franchise.
Yeah.
It was just as much about seeing him do crazy stuff and how he would rope other people in on it, because it kind of becomes this formula of Rick Moranis does something crazy on the lawn, someone raises an eyebrow, and then smash cut to that person wearing a funny hat as well, also combing through the lawn. You know, where they're balancing on the pole, they have the counterweight of the TV roped on the other side, he's wearing a mining hat.
Well, but the one person that almost never ends up on board is his neighbor, Russ Sr.
Sure.
Played by Matt Frewer, who is Max Headroom.
I don't know what that means.
So Max Headroom, maybe you haven't seen it. You should look it up. It's, at the time, it was super rad. Now it's terrifying.
Okay.
Max Headroom was this television character in the 80s.
Yeah.
And he was basically a face in a computer.
Okay.
Kind of akin to, do you remember the Erie, Indiana episode where the kid befriends the ATM machine?
Yes.
Basically
why that, I remember that, I don't know, but
that is Max Headroom. that's not actually him, but Max Headroom was this. He would skip, and he had like a digital voice, and he would kind of break and tweak.
Sure. Yeah,
and he was kind of the crypt keeper of 80s television.
Sure,
where he would come up between shows and be all Max Headroom, you know.
Wow,
and
this sounds like the Videodrome thing. Yeah, that I want to see.
It's absolutely fucked up as hell, but at the time it was super cool because nobody knew what the internet was, and
yeah,
the fact that things could skip digitally meant that they were really cool.
Yeah, right.
Now if somebody invented a character that skipped digitally, I would think my TV was broken.
Take it back to the store, try and get it swapped. Yeah.
But Max Headroom, yeah, the actor that plays Russ Sr. is Max Headroom.
I'm going to have to look that up. I'll try and link to it. I won't link to it on the website, but you'll go to the website and look for a link, I'm sure. Maybe it'll be there. It's a mystery.
You could Google it. It's the same as having a link.
You got excited about Max. You never got back to that ride.
Oh.
There's a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids ride, and you wanted to tell me about it.
Yeah, there was, it was called, there's a big Honey, I Shrunk the Kids franchise. There's Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Honey, I Blew Up the Kid, singular,
yeah.
And Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves, which was the lame attempt at making Wayne Szalinski the star of the film.
Sure.
They
tried.
But there's also this thing called Honey, I Shrunk the Audience.
Yes.
Which was a ride at, I think, Universal Studios.
Sure.
Right around the same time as the Terminator ride. When they were doing all those, you sit in the chair and it vibrates. William Castle rebirth.
Sure, yeah.
Honey, We Shrunk the Audience was this, it was a ride where you would move through giant grass and be attacked by scorpions. It was just further immersion in the strongest part of the film, which was your backyard is a fucking jungle.
Does it still exist?
I don't know if it still exists.
Now there's Eli Roth rides instead.
Right.
That's probably a better place for the universe to be.
Well, yes and no. I think that it's a testament to Honey, I Shrunk the Kids that it's aware that its strongest motion is its immersiveness and the world it creates by just making our world bigger.
Did you just say yes or no to, let me say this again, Eli Roth ride?
There's
an Eli Roth ride. The answer is yes.
Yes, to Eli always Roth ride. Yes, and always Vegas.
Always Vegas?
Maybe
Vegas not. Until you get there. That's what you want until you get there. That's
Vegas
the other half
until you're
the,
in Vegas. Is that what?
Well, it's the other half of the Zack Snyder quote that you don't hear. That's what you want until you get it.
Until you get to Vegas.
There's two funny things about Honey, I Shrunk the Kid.
There's two funny things.
In the scope of the film, there are two funny things that don't fit into a conversation naturally that I wanted to point out. And one is that the kids have been shrunk to the size of fucking bugs, smaller than bugs. They are lost. They might be fucking dead. And we're worried they're having premarital sex. That is primary concern. I think Stuart Gordon especially and Brian Yuzna have to be making a joke after the other films they've made.
Oh, yeah.
That thing where I hyperactively talked at Stuart Gordon for about 5 seconds on our show during one of the Music Box shows. He was talking about nudity and everything was super cool. And you know, we talked for a little bit. I don't know if it was in the thing or not, but we talked a little bit about the treatment of sexuality between younger kids and the age that kids actually come into that and how that's portrayed in film. And so to put that joke in there that, you know, the movie does not treat it like a joke at all. And this is a movie that treats its jokes like jokes, even to wink at them at the end of the fucking movie to call them out. But there's just a moment where their mom is overly concerned. And I think it's one of those jokes they got in kind of under the radar.
Sure. And the second one is Russ Sr.
No, I've actually filled my quota of being able to talk about hats per an episode of Double Feature. The other thing I thought was funny, and this actually it goes back to another Stuart Gordon thing, is fucking with the pets.
Yeah.
There is a moment where they go, we have to try it on something living. And they show the dog run out of the room. And it shows that the fucking camera shows us the dog just long enough to remind us that it's an option before we see that none of the humans even consider it as an option. They go, well, let's all argue over which person will take it because nobody wants to put the dog in front of the machine.
Right.
Fucking awful. Once they figure out that machine, though, they're done. They flip a switch. They say, oh, it works. Okay, push this button. All right, good. The film's over.
Total solution. The Szalinskis will go down in infamy, and the kids are back to normal size. Let's play with it some more.
Yeah, there's no buildup of, oh, well, what about when we put it on? Oh, it's running out of bat. Only so many. It's just, oh, put the kids in front of it. Oh, now they're big. Okay, movie's over.
Right.
Well, movie's not over until we make the food big, which I love because that's actually, when science makes progress, we get things like bigger food, and it's beautiful. That's what you actually use a shrinking growth size laser thing for. email us how you get your friends to watch Spy Kids or something inaccurate about the science in Honey, I Shrunk the Kid, doublefeatureshow@gmail.com. Actually, email us those things. I know we make a joke at the end of every show, but we do read the emails.
Also, shrink your pets. Send us photos of your shrunken pets.
Of your shrunken pets. Our audience knows how to use Photoshop very poorly, and I love when we ask them, and I love when we ask them for pictures. What are we going to do on the show next time? More children's films?
No, next time we're gonna kick off horror time.
Oh, shit, again. It's October, and that's an arbitrary period of time where people like to talk about horror films more than usual.
They let us get away with
that
horror
works,
films.
That works for us really fucking well. Where do we begin?
We're going to begin with The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari and great Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, great place to end as well. That'll be the entire month of October. Now, I think we're actually going to put out a show every week for the month of October. Can
wow.
you believe that?
Look
every
at us.
Every single week.
A pat on the back for Double Feature. Watch more fucking film.
Bye.